Thanks, Michael. I'm an addict named Brett.
Hi,
Hi,
Brett.
Brett.
hi.
Hi, Brett.
Hi, Brett.
It's good to be here. It's good to be clean. It's real good to be a Narcotics Anonymous member. Whenever I get asked to do anything for Narcotics Anonymous, it's a privilege. It's an honor. I'm currently getting over a lung infection, so mentally I'm very fatigued, but it's only 2 in the afternoon here. It's not, I think it's like 8 o'clock for you guys, but like my using was never fun. There's a sentence in the literature, and it always gets me every time I hear it or think about it. There's a sentence in the literature that says, oblivion was preferable. Right. And what that means to me is that I would rather have been dead than feeling and doing and continuing what I was doing. Right. I started using drugs when I was 11 years old. I thought that this was what I was going to do for the rest of my life. My using progressed rather quickly. It didn't matter what I ingested, I could abuse the shit out of it. And I had this like idea that I would be dead by the time I would be 21. And I kept getting kicked out of places and schools. And I kept ending up in places that I didn't want to be. And I would have things done to me that disgust me to this day. And I just couldn't stop using. I just couldn't stop. And I wanted to stop, but I couldn't stop. And I did all the stuff that we talked about. I did all the things that we say. Oh, I'm going to try substituting my using. I'm only going to try using certain drugs certain ways. I'm only going to use on the weekends. Every attempt at my using failed miserably. The disease of addiction always brings us to our knees, right? And so I couldn't stop using. And I remember I had gotten kicked out of school again for the second time, and I had got sentenced to this youth IOP program because I was like 15 years old. And in that program, I saw a kid that I had gotten loaded with. And this kid, who I had used with, had a book that wasn't our book. It was a liquid fellowship book. And I wanted that book because all of the kids in the IOP had that book. And I didn't get that book. I got our basic text. And the only reason I got the basic text is because they had ran out of the other fellowship book. And I remember I had gotten this basic text and I took it home and I was still getting loaded. And I read the stories in the back of the book. And because you start a book in the back, because that's how you start a book, is reading the back first. But I read the stories in the back of the book. And for the first time in my entire life, I felt something other than that hopeless, useless feeling that I talk about when I said oblivion was preferable, that desperation, that isolation, that wanting to just be dead. I felt something that maybe that this would work. Maybe this would work for me. And that's what we give in Narcotics Anonymous is hope. That's our message. And I didn't know that feeling was hope at the time, but that's what it was. And I got a little spark of hope from reading those. And I will say this because I'm a very opinionated person, and I like my opinionated. I like my opinions because they're mine. But relapse isn't part of recovery. Relapse is part of the disease. I hate it when people say relapse is part of recovery. It is not. If you are in this meeting, if you have heard this message, you never, ever, ever have to use again. Our message is absolute. It says if you live this program, you will never use again. That's 100%. If you live this program, recovery and relapse says we have never seen a person fail who has lived this program, right? I was not a overnight success in Narcotics Anonymous. It took me another year to finally get clean and stay clean. And when I got clean, I was so beat up. I did not think this would work again for me. I had tried all sorts of things. I went to meetings loaded. I used at meetings. I just wanted what you guys had so bad that I thought that if I came to meetings using or not, something would rub off and one day I'd wake up and I'd get one day clean. And I always think it's funny when people say, oh, there's somebody using at the meetings. Man, I'm glad they're here. This is the safest place for them. And I remember I had went to a meeting and I heard someone share, and she had said something like, if you're here and you have came back after using, I'm so glad to be in your presence because there's something so important that you have been brought back. And I thought about that for myself, and it made me feel like that I needed to be here. And so if you're here in this meeting and you have used and you have came back, and some people have come back over and over again, I am honored to be in your presence. You are needed, and we love you. And so I went to a meeting and I had no intention to stay clean. And I remember in the church basement, it was called the dungeon meeting because it looked like a dungeon. And I sat on my hands, and this is kind of dated, but we could still smoke at meetings 20 years ago. And I sat in the basement of this church and I was sitting on my hands and I was kicking a habit and I was sick and I was 16 years old. And I thought to myself, I just wanted to stop using so bad. I wanted to stop ending up in the places that I kept ending up. And I said, okay, I'm just not going to use today. And then that day turned into 2 days, turned into 3 days, turned into 19 years. And 9 months later, here I am. You know, when I got clean, I took the suggestions that people said, right? So, you know, I got a sponsor and I got a home group, and I've had the same sponsor since I've been clean. You know, that's not really important to you. It's important to me. I didn't know how to like keep a commitment or make a commitment, but I say that, you know, my sponsor, still has what I want all these years later. But I think about like, okay, so how do I live the program, right? The steps are the program. That's how it works. I think it's funny when people that pick up clean time say, I don't know how it works. And it sounds so ambiguous and cool. But the reality is we have a reading that we read that says this is how it works. It's how we stay clean. And so when I think about whenever I share, I talk about the steps, right? So with the first step for me, I think about an act of surrender, right? So what the first step for me tells me is that I got high, but we recover. I need you guys. I need Narcotics Anonymous. I cannot stay clean without you. I do not like where I end up. I do not like what happens. And so the first step for me is acts of surrender, right? And so at the time when I got clean, I thought to myself, all right, getting a white key tag, that's an act of surrender, right? And yeah, a little, but every time I come to a meeting, every time I read a reading, every time I sit in this seat that connects me to you guys, which are a power greater than myself, that is an act of surrender. And what that says by my actions is that I need you. I cannot stay clean without you, right? And so every time I do service, every time I share, every time I do read a reading, every time I call someone in the program, that in itself is an act of surrender. And what happens with that is it opens the door to hope, right? Because I had the absence of hope, right? Once I surrender, I have this vacuum of like, it needs to be filled, and it gets filled with the second step, this hope. And the hope for me was when I started coming to meetings and I would see people and they would be laughing and they would be having a good time. And I thought to myself, man, I want to have a good time. I want to laugh. My life and my thinking was so miserable. I just couldn't even look at somebody in the eyes when I was sharing. And I remember I had about 6-9 months clean. And I remember looking up and finally looking at somebody in the eyes. And it sounds so simple today, but at the time, it was so pivotal in my recovery that I thought this is what happens when I start to act as if, right? So the second step is like I'm starting to coming to believe that this would work for me. And I start to see evidence in my life surrounding the other people that are in my life. And I remember there was this guy that he would come around and he would get like a week clean. and then he'd get like 10 days clean, and he'd get like 7 days clean, and he kept coming and he kept coming. And one day I was at a meeting, and he had like 9 months clean, and I thought to myself, that is the second step in action right there. He had keys to an apartment, and I thought, somebody is so important to give him keys. That is very much evidence of the second step. And so what I find is that if I keep showing up and keep participating, regardless of how I feel, because my feelings are not facts, what I do is what's important. This is an action-based program. I start to see the evidence of changes in my life, just like when I woke up and I didn't want to get loaded. I don't know when it happened, but it happened within the first year I was at clean. Now, my first basic text, I didn't like the word God or higher power, because when I got here, I had just gotten kicked out of Christian school for the second time. My parents had found out that I was a homosexual. Surprise, I'm gay. And they weren't real cool with that because they were part of this weird kind of cult-like thing. And I didn't like the word God. I didn't like the word higher power. I thought that was fine if that's what you were into, but it was sure not what I was into. And when I think about the third step for me, what I did, what was comfortable for me. And I took a black Sharpie and crossed off every single reference of God or higher power in our literature. And that's what worked for me for quite a bit until it didn't. And I was sitting in a meeting, and it was at a convention, and we're all together, and I'm feeling that energy that we feel, that's palpable when we're in a big room together. You can feel it. Talks about it in the Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous IP. It says you may hear God or higher power mentioned at our meetings, and what we're referring to is a spirit or energy that's felt in our rooms that makes possible what seemed impossible. And it was like this light bulb went off, and I said, I can get with that. What was impossible for me was losing the desire to use and finding a way of life, right? And so I could get with that spirit or energy that we feel in our rooms that makes possible that this messenger of hope. And so one of the things that I think about with the third step is the end of it, where it says we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, right? So that word care is so important. That word care means is that it's still my will and my life. I'm just leaving it in the care of something that's far better and far greater than managing it than me. Because again, my disease of addiction lives in my perception of reality. My perception is skewed and distorted. And that's why it's so important for me to keep coming to meetings and keep participating and keep showing up, regardless of how I feel, because it starts to realign my perception with reality. And so I turn my will over and my life over the care of God. I'm not, if I omit that word care, it means something completely different in this step. It's not what it's
Let's
asking.
move all it. All it can resolve.
Now, when I got to step four, I remember when I was new, I would hear people talk about how horrible step four was and how uncomfortable they were with step four and how much they hated step four. And the reality was is most of those people had never done had written a step four, but the steps aren't designed to hurt me. They're designed to remove the barriers and connect me to you guys. You guys are this power greater than myself. I cannot stay clean without you. And so for me, it was so hard to look at anything positive in my life. I remember I had like a couple years clean, and I spoke somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Michigan. And after I got done sharing, all these people went around the room and they shared these nice things after I got done sharing. And I thought to myself, man, this is just so fucking uncomfortable, so uncomfortable to sit through this room full of people saying these nice things about me, because I just thought so low of myself with years clean that I just didn't deserve that. And so with step four, there's a section in our step working guide that talks about assets. And I don't know why, but like it was just a struggle for me to write anything Good. And my sponsor had me start off with writing about my assets, not all the resentments and everything wrong with me. And it was kind of like the fake it till you make it. I just didn't believe these things, but it was the stuff that you guys told me that was good about me. And I like, sorry, I was drinking water. But with the second part of step four, it took me like 6 months to finish my first step four because I thought that it had to be this perfect amalgamation of every single thing that had happened in my life, and that if I didn't get it right, I would get loaded. But the important thing, like with any step writing, is to do it. And the other thing is that there's a difference between working the steps and writing the steps. Writing the steps is a tool, right? Just like in the How It Works reading, it says understanding and application that it works. When I write steps and share it with my sponsor, I'm getting understanding. The second part of that is when I leave this hour-long meeting and exist in society, how do I apply these principles in my life so I'm not treating people like a dick or treating myself horrible or my partner? I thought for a long time that step five was I'm just reading what I wrote with my sponsor and it's just out in the open, and that's not really what it's asking. What happens when I, that word admit is pivotal in step five, because when I admit something, I'm making it known as true or valid. It's real easy for me to write something down and kind of ignore it, but there's a process that happens when I share it, what I wrote, with my sponsor who knows me intimately and can help me identify these exact nature of our wrongs, which is what the sixth step calls our defects, right? Because that's what I'm looking for in step these patterns of thinking, because I couldn't figure out why with years clean my relationships kept ending the same way. I kept having the same consequences that I had when I had a year clean or 3 years clean or whatever. That's these patterns of thinking, these defects. And when I think about defects, I think that one of our pieces of literature said that our defects are basic human traits distorted out of proportion. So what that tells me is that, one, I'm human, but two, that these defects everybody on the planet has, right? So that means my partner has, who's not one of us. But because I'm an addict and because I have this disease of addiction that lives in my thinking, they're distorted. They're fucked. When I get angry, I want to punch a hole in the wall. I want you to see how angry I am. When I get lustful, I will do whatever it takes to alleviate that. When I get jealous, I want to take it. And so that's the distortion and that's the disease thinking. It's like it's normal to get angry if I got treated unfairly. It's not normal to follow someone home honking my car, thinking I'm going to drive my car through their storefront. I mean, not that I did that, but the thought, the feeling, that intense emotion, right? So that's this defect. And so what this step tells me is that everybody on the planet has these defects, but because I'm an addict, because I have the disease of addiction, they're distorted out of proportion, right? So the solution is not to participate, right? And so to practice the spiritual opposite of the defect, right? And so that's what step seven tells me, is that like instead of practicing anger or these actions, I can practice serenity and peace instead. Instead of being envious about something that I don't have, I can practice gratitude for what I do have. And it sounds so simple, but the more I do it, the more it connects me to you guys and this program. And that's where I need to be. I need to be in this seat connected to you guys because I can't stay clean without you. And so one of the best examples that I always had with step six and seven is like, I look at it like I have this car that's broken and it doesn't run. And I know it's broken and I know it doesn't run. And every morning I get in the car and I try to turn it on and I try to go somewhere, but it's not going anywhere. And that's like me knowing it's not going to run, but I'm going to try it anyway. And so when I got to step eight, you know, I tried to do step eight before I even started writing on it. You know, that was like the first month clean, as I wanted to tell everybody how sorry I was for harming them. And, you know, I'm never going to use again. And let me tell you, my parents and my family and my friends, the few that I had left, I mean, really none, but the people in my life were so sick of hearing I'm sorry, that they didn't want to hear shit. They wanted to see action. Right. And so by the time I get to this step, hopefully I have started to build up some integrity and practice principles, especially the previous two steps, that I don't keep repeating the same mistakes, because that was the thing. I would get clean and I'd say, I'm sorry. And I'd say, I'm going to be different. And I get loaded again. And I do the same thing over and over again. And then I'd wonder why, when I had 6 months clean, nobody trusted me. It's like, well, Brett, you keep doing this over and over again. And so for me, it making a list and not thinking about it is really hard to do. It's kind of like, I know what comes next as I have to put forth the effort. But the list, you know, the process of becoming willing to make the amends is the second part of step eight. And so the way I become willing to make amends is the same way that I've surrendered my whole recovery, is I come to meetings on a regular basis. I participate in sponsorship. I do service. I participate in the fellowship. All my friends are in Narcotics Anonymous. I got clean when I was 16 years old, and I've gotten the privilege to grow up in these rooms this whole time. And so all my friends are here. And so I have gotten to bet my life on this program. And so the way I become willing is to keep doing what I've been doing. And I'm real grateful that I still have the willingness. My friend always says that she's real grateful that she has the willingness to just keep coming to meetings. And I didn't think about that until lately. It's like, man, I'm still grateful that I have the willingness to keep coming to meetings, because that's part of the process of become willing to make amends. Because there's still some amends that I do not want to make from many years ago. But I know that if I keep showing up and keep participating in this program, then I will become willing, because that's what this step tells me. Now, with step nine, the direct amends financially were easy. It was uncomfortable, because I don't know about you, but I don't like spending money. I take that back. I like spending money on things that I don't need. I don't want to spend money on something that's going to make me feel good, like, oh, let me pay back these consequences that I did using. I think that one of the things that was difficult for me with step nine was the amends that I had to make to myself. And when I had like 7 or 8 years clean, I would share at meetings and I would say that I love myself. And I didn't really believe it. I didn't really feel it. It wasn't like, yeah, I love myself, but I said it because that's what everybody else was saying. I thought, you know, that's what I'm supposed to say, because all my peers are, they love themselves, but I really didn't. You know, I had gained a lot of weight and recovery. Now, I know the cameras aren't on here, but just imagine me at 150 pounds with a full head of hair. That's what I look like absolutely right now. Not really, and look like none of those things, but I had become so disparaged in how I look and how I felt about myself that I thought that I was just like this big giant piece of shit. And so I would say that I love myself, and I really didn't do loving things, right? I really didn't treat myself kind. And it wasn't until one day I had bought these bath towels, and they were really nice and really fancy. And I had them for a year and I never used them. And my partner had said to me, he said, how come you never use these nice bath towels? It's so simple, sounds so simple. And I said, and I didn't even think about this. I said, well, I just keep using the ones that have the holes in them that are nasty. And he says, yeah, but you bought these to use. And I says, yeah, but those are for you. And I thought about it real long and hard, like why am I not worthy enough to use these bath towels? And this all goes back to, I don't ever want to use again. I don't ever want to feel the way I felt when I walked in the doors, and I have not had to feel that way. And so all this ties into that sentence that I keep repeating of, if you live this program, you will never use again. And so this is part of living the program. I have to learn to love myself. I have to learn how to make these hard amends to myself. And I remember it took me years to start loving myself regardless of how I looked. And I remember, I don't know, I had like 10 years clean and I was in my mid-20s and my hair was falling out. And I just, man, I just hated how I looked and hated how I felt. And something happened one day when I woke up, and it sounds so silly to say these affirmations in the mirror, but I would say these things in the mirror that were very loving. And I would talk to myself how I would talk to a sponsee or one of my friends. And it was so uncomfortable and I did not believe it. But I kept saying these things, and just like everything, I started to believe it. I started to believe that I was worthy, and I started to believe that everything was okay. And I started to like how I looked, and I started to not care that I was balding or that I gained weight or whatever physical feature. And I started to love myself internally. And that was something that I never thought would happen, because let me tell you, I got loaded because I didn't like how I felt. I got loaded because I hated being gay. I thought that if I had blonde hair and blue eyes and 140 pounds and looked a certain way, I would have never gotten loaded. And let me tell you, that is not the case. I have something inside of me that cannot be satiated. And so when I got clean, I had about 30 days clean. I went to this meeting and I was new, and you know, you raise your hands if you're a newcomer. And there was this woman who had been visiting from New York, and she says, well, we're going to read step 10. And this guy said, well, no, there's a newcomer. And he pointed to me and he said, we're going to read step 1. And she said to me, and I always try to do her accent, but it comes off Australian. And so I'm not going to do her accent, even though I think I do a good New York accent that sounds Australian. But she said, this is a 12-step program. If you want to stay clean, you're going to work all the steps, not 1, 2, 3. And she looked right at me and she said, do you want to stay clean? And I said, yes. She said, all right, we're reading step 10. And I got something at that I don't have to be at a certain point in my recovery to get something out of what we're reading. It doesn't matter if I have one day clean or 10 days clean or 10 years clean. I will get something out of this, because this book is divinely inspired and written by us, for us. And what I got out of step 10 is doing versus feeling. It doesn't matter what I'm feeling. My feelings are not facts. That is something that my sponsor has said to me all the time, year after year, to this day. It is drilled in my brain that my feelings are not facts. They're just feelings. And I feel like is not a feeling, that's a thought, that's the disease. So when I say shit like I think I feel like, that's not a feeling, that's me listening to the disease. And so what step 10 tells me is what matters is what I do, not what I think, not what I say, or what I say matters, but what I do, right? Not what I feel. And so step 10 is an action based step, just like the other ones. And what it's telling me is, regardless of what I'm feeling, what I do is what's important. And when I got clean, I did the Living the Program IP, which I think is one of our best pieces of literature. It's got like 28 questions. The first question is like, am I clean today? What did I do differently? Did my disease run my life? I can probably remember all of them because I did them so much. But what it did is it started to focus me on what I am doing, not what I'm feeling. Because when I was new, and just like different periods throughout my recovery, is my feelings are going to be all up and down regardless of what's happening. And so what this step teaches me is what's important is what I'm doing, right? Am I going to meetings? Am I calling people? am I participating in the fellowship? Am I calling my sponsor? All of those things. And it was so important to instill that into my recovery. When I had 3 years clean, my grandfather, my grandparents were the people who kind of raised me, but my grandfather had passed. And my parents had showed up at my house, and my dad had this letter from my mom that my mom had wrote. And they had read this letter, and my dad was standing there reading it to me, and it basically told me that they were sick of me being gay, and they wanted nothing to do with me, and they wish they had never adopted me when I was, you know, they adopted me when I was like a week old, and that that they didn't love me, and they wish that I, they would rather have me using what I was using than be gay. And at the time, I had thought that was the most devastating I was going to feel. And I was also the activities chair of our area. And that was a day before we had this a big event. And I remember it distinctly because this was a Friday and the event was on a Saturday. And I said to myself, my friend was at my house when this happened. And I said, I just do not like how I feel. I feel so hopeless. I felt like so low that happened. And I remember telling myself, I got to do this event tomorrow. And I will use after that. I just didn't want to feel. It's not like I wanted to use to get loaded. I just didn't want to be alive. And I remember I did this event and I helped out and we put on this event and I went home and I didn't get loaded. And then I woke up the next day and I went to a meeting and I shared about what I was feeling. And I did that every day for the next 18 months. And one day I woke up and it wasn't so hopeless, right? I didn't feel those intense feelings. And that's what this step tells me. This 10th step tells me that just because I'm clean doesn't mean shitty things don't happen. It means that I have to show up and do the footwork regardless of how I feel, because I didn't feel like doing shit. But step 10 tells me that it matters what I do, not what I feel. Because it's always darkest before dawn, everything will be okay. My friend always says, hold on to your fork because dessert's coming. And I fucking held on to my fork and it came. And I'm so glad that I did not give up before the miracle happens. And one day I woke up and I didn't feel so desperate and hopeless. And I didn't disconnect from this program. I jumped in head first. And I've been doing that ever since I got here. Now, when I got to step 11, it was something that I very much glossed over for a long time because I thought, again, that was fine for you guys, not for me. I'll pray the way I wanted. I'll meditate the way I wanted. And for a long time, that worked. And that's the thing. There's a question in the step working guide that says, what do I understand about the God of my understanding? And I put absolutely nothing. I don't understand anything. And that's fine. And that's the thing. It's like I get to decide whatever I want. And also, one of the points of this program of being open-minded is as my life changes and grows, I get to reevaluate my old ideas and chain and not be so stuck in my ways, because I have some very staunch beliefs about Narcotics Anonymous. And I realize that when I have these staunch beliefs, it separates me from change. And so when I think about step 11, right? And when I think about my relationship with that today, there's a word in there that's really important. It says, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And so what that means is that I'm already building upon this relationship before I get to this step, right? So the moment I get here and I stop using and I start betting my life on this program, I'm already improving that relationship, whether I like it or not. And if you would have asked me when I got here if this was something I wanted to do, I would have said, fuck no. But here we are. And so all of that self-hatred and that angst and the hatred I had at myself as a child and all the shame I had for being gay, and really being the victim on myself for so many years. What happens with step 11 is I get to embrace that inner child. I get to love that inner child. I get to say loving things to him that are kind. And I start to experience this unconditional love for myself and this connection that I have with a higher power. And I like to think that, you know, there's these people when I got clean that were like these giants of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And they were like my heroes, and they're not gods, right? It's important to have people in this program that are your heroes, not gods, right? They have qualities that you aspire to have. And there's these people in this program that were my heroes, and they have since passed. But I kind of imagine that step 11 for me is that they're all with me, and they're all loving me, and they're all caring for me, and they're all making me feel safe, because that's what I always wanted, is to feel safe. When I was at a meeting with them, I would just come into the meeting, I'd sit down, and I'd take a deep breath, and I'd think, thank God Pauline's here, thank God Willard's here, thank God. I would be so grateful if they were here, because I know we'd have a good meeting, because they made me feel safe and welcome. And that's what kind of happens with this step, is I feel safe, I feel okay, I feel embraced in my higher power's love. And I get that when I come around to meetings with you guys, is I feel that connection. I feel it the most when we're at a convention and we're all around each other. You can feel that spirit or energy. It's fucking contagious. And I just get overwhelmed and I cry, and I get so much gratitude from that. Now, what that tells me is all of this prepares me for step 12, right? Step 12 says they have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, right? And so what that means is that all the lights are on in my house. I'm ready to carry this message, right? And so I think about what step 12 is for me, is that I'm at the right place at the right time, and I know why I'm there. I know why things are happening. It's not like some esoteric thing, but I just surrender to the process and know this is why I'm here. And so there's a couple experiences that have happened in my recovery that I always like to share about when I talk about the steps. And so one of them is when I had, I don't know, 3 or 4 years clean, I went to this convention in Canada, and it was right when they changed the laws to cross the border. So I really shouldn't have crossed the border, because I didn't have the proper documentation, but, you know, just like any good addict, I wanted to go to the convention. So I went to the convention, I got across the border, and I said to myself, well, if I get across the border, I will get home just fine, which is truth, because I'm talking to you guys right now. But I did not get across just fine on the way home. I got detained for between 8 and 10 hours. I was very uncomfortable, and I was sitting in the little booth, and they're asking me all these questions. I had just come back from a Narcotics Anonymous convention, and I was so happy to sing it from the rafters, and they're asking me all these questions about Narcotics Anonymous and different things about that. And this one border guard comes in there and starts questioning me and asking me details about Narcotics Anonymous. And it sounds so dated, but you know, cell phones weren't as fancy as now, but I showed him how you could look up meetings in your home area and stuff like that. And he said, I have a relative that lives in this small town, Sarnia. And he says, I just want to know more about Narcotics Anonymous and what you guys do. And I didn't think nothing of it, you know. I just wanted to get home. So I told the guy, gave him information and helped him out. And anyway, I go home, right? And that was that. I didn't think nothing about that story until 15, 16 years later. I got invited to speak at a convention in London, Ontario. And the room that I was in, there was some difficulties with the previous program chair, and some stuff got switched around. And so I ended up speaking at a different topic and different things and stuff. I just went with it. And I remember sitting in this room after I had shared, And they had people that would come up and talk, and it was like a newcomer panel. And there was this girl that got up and talked, and she said that she got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous by her cousin, who was a border guard, because he stopped somebody that was coming home from a convention like 15 years ago. And I think to myself that I'm at the right place at the right time, and I know why I was there. And that just tells me how connected I am to this program. And that's what the 12 step feels like, that I'm just wrapped up in the love of the fellowship, and that everything is going to be okay. Everything is safe. Everything is going to work out. Everything is. And to feel that and to believe that is so great. My life is so good because of Narcotics Anonymous. Let me tell you that, like, I've lived in shitty one bedroom apartments. No offense to anybody that listens. Shitty one bedroom apartment. But I've lived in studios and other stuff. And I've been with my partner for 13 years. About 6 years ago, we moved into this place, and I'm sitting in my basement right now, and it has a patio. And I think to myself how important I am that I have a basement and a patio and these things in my life that I just never thought would be possible without being clean and being an NA member. I am not an NA member because I say I am. I'm an NA member because I fucking act like an NA member. I bet my life on this program. And one of the things that I always wanted was a dog. And it sounds so silly, but I wanted a dog so bad, but I could never have one where I lived. And so we moved into this place, and I got a dog like within a year of moving here. And he's the worst qualities of myself and my partner. So he's very difficult. But I think to myself how much gratitude I have, not just for being clean, but for something so simple like that. And I get so overwhelmed with gratitude to think that I'm important enough to have a dog. It sounds so silly, but when I was using, I wanted to die. I didn't want to be alive no more. And to think what I would have given up had I not done what this program asked and bet my life on this program, I wouldn't have had anything that I had. But most importantly, I fucking love myself today. I am in love with who I have become in this program. I like myself today. I like how I look. I like how I sound. I used to hate the sound of my own voice. I like who I've become. One of the other stories I want to share, and then I'll stop, is when I got clean, there was a kid that I had gotten clean with. And I say kid because we were very young. And he was so talented, and he was so funny, and he was one of my close friends. And just like, like everybody kind of, if you're not doing what this program says, you will not stay here. And he kept getting loaded and kept ending up in places. And eventually I lost track of him. And I tried to track him down numerous times over the years on Facebook and stuff, and I could never find him. And I kind of thought the worst because, when you don't hear from somebody for 19 years, you think that's it. And one day, me and my partner went on vacation to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, which is was fun with our chaotic dog. And we go to the middle of nowhere, and I wanted to go to a meeting. And I wanted to go to this meeting. I don't know why I had this overwhelming desire of like, I go out of town and I want to go to the meeting, but I wanted to go to this meeting. And I said, I'm going to go to this meeting. It's like, 20 miles away, which in Tennessee terms is like 45 minutes. So I go to this meeting. And at the time, I had like hot pink hair. And I look very out of place for the rural mountains of Tennessee. And I sit there, and they can tell. They said, "Oh, you're from out of town." And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, where are you from?" And I said, "Well, I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is, 30 minutes from Detroit, which nobody knows if you're not from here." And they said, "Oh, okay." And they said, Oh, they said, oh, you know, somebody that usually comes to this meeting is from Detroit area or somewhere around there. Let me get your number. And I didn't think nothing of it. I gave them my number and came home a couple days later. And about 2 weeks later, I get this text. And it was a kid that I've been looking for this whole time that we had gotten clean together. And I had just missed him at the meeting because he was out of town. And I think to myself, throughout my recovery, I've gotten these little glimpses of letting me know that I'm on the right path and I'm doing the right thing and I'm headed in the right direction. And it feels so great to have those experiences in Narcotics Anonymous. That's what I think the 12th step is. And I want to close with this. When I was using, I used like a pig. I couldn't stop using. And there was the first guy I dated I used with. And I remember I had turned him on to using. And the first time he used, he fell out and passed out. And I felt bad, but I kind of thought, well, that's the consequences of using. And we kept using together and I got clean. I got clean and stayed clean. And he never got clean. He never got clean. And he never got the chance to stay clean. And he ended up dying from using. And I probably had about 5 or 6 years clean. And I found out he had passed. And they had given me the information to the funeral. And I didn't think I was going to go. And I hemmed and hawed about it. And I finally decided I'd go. And I was just kind of uncomfortable. Like, what's the reason for me going? Why am I here, God? This is. And his sister came up, and his sister was using. And his sister was talking about me, and she hadn't seen me since I had gotten clean. And so I got to tell her that I was clean, and I got to tell her about Narcotics Anonymous, and I got to tell her about how it had saved my life, and it could save hers too. And I got to share with her what this program has done for me. And that's what I got to do today to you guys. So thanks.